Blackhawks fans, welcome into the Four Feathers Podcast. It's a happy hour edition coming at you, Giannani and Ron Luce. Ron, how you doing this fine Friday evening?
Crack 'em. Well, Johnny, I'm going to hashtag crack 'em to get the second day of the weekend started, because as we know, the weekend starts on Thursdays. But hey, man, I'm doing good. It's good to be back on a microphone with you. It's been a hot minute. It's good to be talking a little bit of Blackhawks hockey. They've had some very interesting stretch of games lately, and I'm excited to get into all the nooks and crannies of it. But it's always good to be back on the microphone with you, my friend. How you doing?
Yeah, Ron, I'm doing good, but I'm also a little bit sad, Ron, because this is, you know, the title of this episode. We're marching down the home stretch, wrapping up March. Only one game left in March here, and then eight more in April for a total of nine games left. We're in the single digits here, counting down the Blackhawks season. I know this; it feels like a little bit tired because baseball is getting going, right? We just had opening day yesterday, so gears are kind of shifting, right, in terms of the sports season. But I don't know about you, but like when it comes, like, you know, I know Stanley Cup playoffs will go on, but comes like end of June, like early July, especially when the Hawks were in the playoffs, like I'll be missing this shit. It's like, even though we're, you know, be outside watching baseball, having a good time, I love hockey. It's my first sport. I love it. So I'm a little bit sad in that regard, Ron.
No, I feel that, Johnny. The only bright side for me to hockey being over and into the summer is that GM Ron gets to put the GM cap right on in full force.
Yeah.
Outside of that, that's about it. So I'm right there with you, man. I totally hear you. We're all going to be sitting there in the middle of July itching and scratching for when Blackhawks hockey returns.
Right. Just like waiting for the announcement for when training camp starts. Yeah. I feel like I'll
100%
pining for that soon. But yeah, GM Ron, yeah, look out for that coming up on tapsportsnet.com. I'm sure it'll be filling the Blackhawks section there with a lot of good stuff regarding the Blackhawks and their draft situation, cap situation, trades, free agent signings, all of that good stuff. So as always, on tapsportsnet.com. Go and check it out. That's what Four Feathers Podcast is brought to you by. Ron, we're going to talk a little bit about the Hawks' recent stretch of games, a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde back and forth there. And then we've got some players individually to discuss, a handful of them that I want to get into due to recent trends. Some good, some bad, some mediocre. And then we're also going to do our regular stuff, ruffle some feathers, do some stick taps, and take a look at what's on tap next. So that's what's on the docket today. Before we get into anything, make sure you're subscribed on YouTube, On Tap Sportsnet. Follow us on the socials at Four Feathers Pod and at On Tap Sportsnet. And as always, check out ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports, literature, and podcasting needs. All right, I mentioned it, Ron. Jekyll and Hyde stretch here. Seems like the Hawks play a good game. It looks like a full, complete 60-minute effort. And then they go completely quiet and get shut out. The stretch that I'm looking at, you know, I think they dubbed it the California Cup in the locker room that they're talking about. But you got a 5-0 loss home against LA. They just got completely trapped to death. 5-2 win versus San Jose. Nice outburst there. 6-2 loss at LA. 4-0 loss at Anaheim, which was an odd one. 5-4 comeback win at San Jose. That was exciting. 3-1 win versus Calgary. I know you were in attendance for that one. And a 2-0 loss at Ottawa last night. Another back to the lifeless, you know, after a good effort on Tuesday night. So, man, it's an interesting stretch because you finally saw some, you know, more equal level of competition here. Mm-hmm. And it's been varying results on this front, Ron, although I can't say I'm not entirely shocked.
Yeah, I'm not entirely shocked. I think especially with the Kings. I think that's the one team that, when looking at the quote-unquote California Cup schedule, it was like, ah, those games are going to be tough. Like, if they could draw any points out of those games, it's a win and was how I was looking at it going into that first game on the 15th. And both losses to LA, not terribly surprised. They're firmly in the playoff picture in the West. They're one of the better teams in that Pacific Division this year. Not a lot of surprise there. I agree with you, though. I think the Anaheim game was very strange. Not surprising seeing them
shut out. It's one thing to lose, but get shut out there and look like there wasn't much going on at all.
It's brutal. Yeah, that was not a good one. But, hey, they take two against the Sharks. The OT winner was a very thrilling one because we – actually, Tony and I were in together for that game and watching along, and, you know, we're watching and, ah, shit, they're down 4-0. This is ridiculous. You know, and then they get one and then they get two. Then the third goal gets scored. And all of a sudden you're like, son of a bitch, this team's going to come back, aren't they? And do something.
Yep.
Then they tie it with 37 seconds and everybody's like, let's go. And then Seth Jones scores in overtime. And I almost popped a blood vessel because I was so excited. So, yeah, you know, it's one of those things, but, Johnny Jackal and Mr. Hyde, indeed, is the best way to describe this Blackhawks team over this recent stretch.
Yeah, I want to touch on that San Jose game because I was at a little bachelor party over the weekend, and that San Jose game, you know, it was after a full day of college basketball. That's what we were watching all day, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder. I'm not huge into sports betting, but those guys were, you know, going at it, you know, trying to throw crazy parlays and whatnot on the college hoop game. And they, you know, some guys came out on top, some guys lost. And then one of the guys that lost tapped me on the shoulder, and he's like, hey, I don't know anything about hockey, but I know there's late games going on. Give me a play here. And I was like, well, if you want, like, it was after the Hawks scored like that second goal. So I was like, if you want, looks like the Hawks can come back here. The Sharks are pretty bad. And sure enough, they came back. So I helped salvage someone's on the betting front. So that was a win for me.
That's a big win, Johnny. That's a big win. Hey, that's good advice. That's the time when the live money line works in your favor, and it's right. Always a beauty.
You and Tony are huge fans of that.
We are, and you know what? I didn't do it that night, and I'm kicking myself for not doing it. Too many distractions for me to stay fully vested to even think about sports betting at that point that evening.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. Hey, it's only happened a couple of times this year, but the times that it has happened, it's been a nice W when you look up at that, you know, +300 Blackhawks money line and the live bet in the third period, and they end up cashing it for you. And it's a nice little treat at the end of the game.
Yeah. Exhilarating in overtime there too. So that was a good jolt of energy because that came in, you know, right around midnight too. So for a full day of boozing and watching hoops and, you know, the good going at it. So that was a good way to cap that evening there. All right. Couple guys that were instrumental in that comeback against San Jose that we were talking about specifically there, Ron, are two guys that are fan favorites of ours. And we're going to start 100%. With Mr. Ryan Donato. And I think you wrote a little something about him over at ontapsportsnet.com. Why don't you tell the listeners about that?
Yeah, Ryan Donato's been on a hot streak. I think he's been one of the lesser appreciated players in this good month of play. We can call March a good month of play for the Chicago Blackhawks. They had 6 wins so far in the month of March. They only had 4 combined wins in the months of January and February. So already playing much better hockey here in the St. Paddy's Day month of the year. And Ryan Donato has been a huge piece of that. You date it back all the way to the beginning of March, and you factor in even a couple of scoreless games there to start the month. But over the course of the month, 9 points in 11 games for Ryan Donato, and all but that Calgary game, he was pretty much playing exclusively in the bottom 6. I think that's the bigger thing even here to note, Johnny. He has been a really good depth scorer for this Blackhawks team, perhaps the best depth scorer that they've had all season. And a guy that I think is continuing to play up to that contract, if not outplaying it right now. And we'll get to that a little bit later. But he's been a treat to watch. I think this is the Ryan Donato a lot of people were hoping to see. If he can keep a little bit of this play, obviously I don't expect him to be, you know, almost a point per game player necessarily here down the stretch. But if he can have another 6-7 points to close out the year, like, he's already closing in on like career highs for points. And again, he's played predominantly in the bottom 6 most of the season. So really, really impressive stuff from Ryan Donato. And you mentioned, we talked about, you know, ad nauseum about that Sharks game. 3 points. That's a career high for him in a single game. He had a goal and 2 helpers in that one for the Hawks to come back and ultimately win it. And he assisted on the Kurashev goal that ultimately tied it up. So really good play from number 8, Ryan Donato of recent, Johnny.
Right. Now, I know you drew it out to like kind of the beginning of March, and that's a good kind of bigger picture one. But even when you like slim it down even further, 7 points in the last 9 games, then obviously that 3-point effort there, but 4 goals, 3 assists in that span. That's what you want to see from a depth forward like that. And you know, I think Ryan Donato's detractors, because there are flaws to his game, don't get me wrong, but you need to accept that he's not going to be the smoothest with his hands. It's just not his game, but he's a grinder. He's a gamer. He has fire, passion, grit, TWTW. And I know that all sounds like, you know, all like meathead like stuff there, but it's true, because he goes down to the corner, he'll dig pucks out, and he's not afraid to go to the front of the net and slam the puck home on a rebound or get a redirect, whatever it may be. And I think you should just appreciate him for what he is in that front. So I've been pleased to see him have a nice little surge here in March.
Yeah, and just to quickly to add on to that, Johnny, because I think you nailed it perfectly. Also, a guy that can play all 3 forward spots. Hard to find that out. A lot of guys
can
play both the center and the wing pretty effectively.
And you see it. I know the game against Ottawa wasn't too much special, but they would, you know, throw him in there when they had a specific play they wanted a lefty on the draw for, so he can come in. And he did fairly well. I have to go and look at numbers on his faceoff, but there were a couple ones where he at least got it to the spot. The Hawks didn't execute the rest of the play, but at least the first part, got to win the faceoff for it to even be set up, right? So
absolutely,
he did his part there. So it's good stuff from Ryan Donato as of late. Another one, we'll have a scoring uptick here. One of our other favorites, Ron, look at my name tag here. The kiss of Seth. It's the kiss of Seth lately, Ron. I saw a graphic on the broadcast for Thursday night's game against Ottawa, and it was Seth Jones' shooting percentage for, I forget what the first, like, whatever, 36 or something like that games, and it was under 1%, 0.9, and then that, like, uptick to, like, what, something like close to, like, 16%, which is unheard of, you know, in NHL terms. You can talk about shooting percentage there, but 10 points in his last 11 games, 6 goals, 4 assists in that span. Nice to see the scoring come through from Mr. Seth Jones.
Yeah, 100%. And Johnny, I think especially with Jones, it feels like, you know how just you feel like the universe, like we sit here and we say, well, you know, we're a smaller outlet and we're on Tap Sportsnet. And some people in Chicago know who we are. And we have a saying over at Cubs on Tap that the Chicago Cubs listen to Cubs on Tap because we say shit and something happens that directly relates to the shit we said in that favor, whether it was negative or positive. I think the Blackhawks listen to Four Feathers Podcast.
Confirmed.
Because I wrote an article back at the end of February on the leap day of this year, so practically March, saying, hey,
exactly a month ago today.
Yeah. Exactly a month ago today. And I said, hey, it's time to stop disrespecting Seth Jones. And at the time, it was an innocent article. And then he started to score, Johnny. Then he started to have this uptick in offensive performance, still playing 26 plus minutes a night on top of it as well as a workhorse defenseman. Seth Jones heard the disrespect. And he's quickly answering the bell. And he knows that people need to stop disrespecting him. So, Johnny, what once was an innocent article has turned into a bit of a shtick of mine here for the stretch down the season. But it's time to stop disrespecting Seth Jones.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, the thing is, you can hate the contract. I mean, I think at the end of Seabrook's deal, a lot of people were ragging on that, right? But it wasn't because you disliked Brent Seabrook, right? I think you could still separate the player from the contract. And, you know, guess what? That was a Stanbow doing. Stanbow's gone, but you're saddled with it. Nobody's taking that contract. It's not going to move. It's not getting restructured. This isn't the NFL. It doesn't happen like that, right? So just accept that they're separate entities and then appreciate the player for what he is, because he's in his prime right now and he's finally seeing, you know, maybe some good luck come through. But then also just the skill on connecting it, maybe making a more concerted effort to shoot the puck, obviously, when you have two multi-goal games in that stretch that I just mentioned there. You're obviously doing something a little bit right on the offensive end there. So like Donato, good to see Seth Jones have that uptick in scoring. All right, we've got a new face to discuss, Ron. Landon Slaggart, after signing, finishing his career with Notre Dame. He's with the Hawks now. It's been 7 games. He had 2 assists. I believe he racked up both in that game against Calgary, and he was close to scoring his first goal. I know you're in attendance. That would have been a cool moment for him to have it at home there. But regardless, I like this kid's game. Some of the things I talk about with Ryan Donato, with like the willingness to go to corners, win some battles there, kind of wide frame, it feels like, when he's out on the ice, at least uses his body well. That's the things that I appreciate about Landon Slaggart, and hopefully the points will come.
Yeah, 100%. You could make the argument he should have had a 4-point game in that game against Calgary, Johnny. He had 2 opportunities to cash in, one of which went off the goalpost and out, and it was an absolute heartbreaker, especially because we had a really good betting night on Tuesday as well, Johnny. We had a Seth Jones anytime goal scorer. That one cashed. We had a good old Jason Dickinson anytime goal scorer. How are you now? Because he was due, and he came out and did exactly what I expected him to do. But we had a little Landon Slaggart, a little sprinkle with that +700.
Disappoint, right?
And
you had a goal.
Goal score, oh, yeah. Wow. That close. Yeah. And I was like, oh, it would have been beautiful. All we needed was a Kurashev goal, and it would have been like a $350 betting night for me on about $40. It was good. It was a good night. It was a very good night. But I'm telling you, I'm right there with you, Johnny, when it comes to Landon Slaggart as a player. This is a guy, I tried to take a trip up to Notre Dame before the end of the season, just logistically didn't work out, unfortunately. But a guy I was really intrigued to see, because I knew he was going to be the first prospect that we got to see of this next wave of guys that are coming here for the future, with the likes of a Frank Nazar and some of these other guys that are a little bit closer to the show. And he does exactly what you said, right? He's a gritty, grindy player. I think, perfect world, he's a really elite third line forward at the NHL level. I think he's a guy that if you needed him to, he can play throughout the middle six, but is probably better suited for the bottom six. And again, a guy that can play all three spots. He can play the wing. He played a lot of center in college. So this is a guy that at least has the ability, and he's pretty defensively sound. He's playing a lot of late game minutes Johnny, instead of, you know, we've seen it in years past, right, with the young guys where maybe they're playing on a line with somebody who's has good defensive prowess, like a Jason Dickinson, but then they, you know, they'll throw out a different winger out there with them to just have more of a defensive look. No, Slaggart was right there out with Anderson and Dickinson late in that game against Calgary to shut them down and keep the Blackhawks in front. He's got the wherewithal to play the defensive end on the puck. I agree with you. I think the points are coming, but also really nice praise from a guy like Jason Dickinson when asked about Slaggart. He said, hey, he jumped in on our line and it felt seamless without Blackwell being there in the lineup. They were able to hum, and that was probably the best line for the Hawks all night long. That first line had a lot of chances, obviously didn't score any points, but that second line, Johnny, with Slaggart, Dickinson, and Anderson was probably the Blackhawks' best line in that win over Calgary on Tuesday.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, with Flynn and Slager, this is just good developmental time because even if the points don't come, as long as you see this level of effort in the type of game, all of those intangibles that you had just discussed there, it's going to be a positive step in the right direction for him at the very beginning of his hockey career here, too. Because think about some other guys that got their feet wet after signing out of college. Alex Vlasic, he got that little taste of like 11 games and then spent the full season in Rockford. I know defensemen are a little bit different in makeup than forwards there in terms of development cycle. But then you've got other guys that come in. Wyatt Kaiser, I know he got that little taste. And once again, a defenseman on that front. But it can only help him going forward. 100%. So I like what we see so far, and hopefully gets that same amount of run here down the home stretch in the final 9 games. All right, Ron, most of this has been pretty positive so far, but we don't like to sugarcoat anything. So I'm going to bring it back to a topic that we've discussed ad nauseum on the show. So we are not going to go long, super in depth on this, but I got to mention him. Lucas Reichel feels like he comes up every time. And you know me, I've been pretty tough on him. And I just, you know, since returning from Rockford, where he's got 1 assist in 6 games, I know the point production hasn't been there all season overall, 11 points through 56 games. Ron, just for me, I'm tired of hearing about the good shifts. Like, sure, it's nice that he's more assertive, and I will give him credit that he does look a little bit more confident since he's come back up. But man, any way you slice it, 11 points through 56 games is an objectively bad season for Lucas Reichel, given his preseason expectations. And I understand development isn't linear here, but man, this is a guy that he got a lot of praise from Kyle Davidson. He got a lot of praise from Luke Richardson early. And I know Luke Richardson kind of soured on him a little bit, as you saw in his deployment and eventual send down. But it's just not, it's not clicking there, Ron. And I think it goes back to, he's a standbow holdover, and I just don't think he fits with what the Blackhawks are trying to do here. Not say that he's not going to be back, because you can probably retain him very cheaply as an RFA, but man, I'm sick of hearing the good shift stuff. Let's see some results.
Yeah, 100%, Johnny. I think on top of it, what is kind of, I don't want to use the term missed with a guy like Lucas Reichel, but I think amongst the fan base, something that goes a bit missed is the fact that, like, he went back down to Rockford and was good, but was not great. And I think that was something that I was keeping an eye on when he went back down to the A and was getting regular playing time. First off, he wasn't playing on the first line, which, whatever, I'm not super worried about that. I know there was probably chemistry with that top line. Anders Bjork, David Gust, they've been playing together all season long, so I get it. But he wasn't, you know, putting up gaudy numbers. I was hoping he would go down and put up, you know, he was down for what, 9 games before they recalled him up. I wanted like 11 points in 9 games or something of that nature.
7 and it was like 1 goal, 6 assists. Like,
yeah, it was a lot of helpers. He only lit the lamp once. And it just, I agree with you, Johnny. I don't think he's necessarily going to be a bad hockey player, but you put it perfectly. There were a lot of guys from the Stan Bowman era that Kyle Davidson looked at when he took over as general manager and said, because of who I'm bringing in as the head coach, you are not going to fit the scheme. And that's okay. Not everybody fits what coaches want to do. It is just the nature of the beast. We see it in every single sport. And I think in the case with hockey, you know, Reichel's game is very finesse. And he best is served on the wing. I think we need to give a little more credit to Philip Kurashev from a season ago, right? We were all talking about this hot stretch down the, you know, with Reichel and Athanasiou. Kurashev was centering that line, and clearly he was part of the reason that engine went, because we're seeing it this year now, him being kind of that Robin to Connor Bedard's Batman. I wanted to see more out of Reichel. I think he still absolutely has a chance to be a solid NHL player. I'm really starting to think, though, he's going to get the Kirby Doc treatment this offseason. I think he's going to get moved. And I think it's because Davidson wants to give him a chance while he's young enough to go and reestablish himself somewhere. And I think it just makes sense for the Blackhawks to stop just dragging this guy along and trying to get him to work when it's clearly not working here. And like you said, Johnny, I mean, at the end of the day, 11 points in 56 games is not great. And yes, I agree with Skokes here. He puts it perfectly. Philip Kurashev is having that offensive development that we were expecting out of a guy like Lucas Reichel. And you know what? It was something I said in the offseason. I said, hey, keep an eye on Philip Kurashev this year. I think he's going to take a big step forward. You saw the contract he earned in arbitration. He's quickly outplaying that contract. He's going to cost them at least $5.5 million the next time that it comes up. So, you know, it's okay sometimes for guys to not work out in your scheme. He's just not that type of player that's going to fit right now, I think, here in Chicago. It might be best to put him in a package deal over the summer, Johnny, give him a new change of scenery, and I hope he blossoms somewhere else. I think he's a player that a lot of people enjoy watching, and you've seen the skill. It's not absent, right? He's put up the numbers in the AHL. He's put the numbers up in the NHL in small doses, but this has been a really rough year for Lucas Reichel, and it might be time for, you know, a fresh change of scenery for him while he's still young enough, where another team get their claws on him, getting him in a system that probably benefits his game a lot more. And then in turn, hopefully develop him into a full-time NHLer instead of a guy that's kind of a tweener, which he's been so far this year.
Well put. I don't want to waste any more hot air on that, Ron. We've discussed him so much this year that we're going to move on to our next one and our golden boy, Connor Bedard. And Ron, my take on Connor Bedard is that he's due because he's on a 5-game goalless streak. He's still producing some assists in this span, but I have a feeling he's going to light the lamp soon, and it could come as soon as Saturday night in Philly. His previous long for a goalless drought was 8 games. I highly doubt it reaches that.
Yeah, my spidey sense, Johnny, is telling me something's going to happen in Philly on Saturday night. I think that environment, he's the type of player that I think quietly likes the pressure because he's just such a hockey sicko at the core of it when it's all said and done. I think he's a guy that would love to walk into Philadelphia and tally a goal, especially knowing that you then go to New York and you have the Islanders on Tuesday, but then you come back for 2 games over the weekend against Central Division foes. I think he's going to turn it up a little bit here. We see a lot of Central Division down the stretch here, and even a lot of the Pacific Division before it ultimately finishes out at home with the Hurricanes as the last Eastern Conference opponent that this team sees this season. So I agree with you. I don't think we're going to get to 8 games because that would probably put him, what, at that Blues game would be the next time he would score then. I think he's going to light at least once before then.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to our next topic, and that is prospects in the NCAA tournament. You've got Aiden Thompson with Denver, Riley Green with Boston U, Oliver Moore and Sam Renzel over at Minnesota, and Frank Nazar, Michigan, the guys that played on Thursday advance. I believe Frank Nazar is coming up here on Friday night, shortly after we're recording this. So be interesting to keep an eye on these guys, Ron. I think it'd be cool for Frank Nazar to have a little run here and get the juices flowing even more so for Hawks fans, since unfortunately, after these 9 games, we're going to be prospect watching, prospect recapping, thinking about the future instead of playoff hockey.
Indeed. And Johnny, I selfishly kind of want Michigan to lose. And it's because I know Nazar is probably going to get some tick in the NHL. And I really do want to see him on this team this year. But at the same time, I'm sure he and that Michigan team want to keep going in the tournament. I think they're going to have every opportunity to do so. You know, we might get a Nazar sighting at the end of the year for maybe those last 2 games on the West Coast, maybe the last home game. He gets a chance to suit up in front of the United Center faithful. But that Michigan team is just too good right now, and they're kind of spoiling the hopes of seeing Frank Nazar at the NHL level this season. Yeah. So they've been on a heater, though. They've been a good team, and they've been fun to watch. So, you know, it leaves us with Landon Slaggart to sit here and kind of watch and see his development over the course of the rest of the regular season. But Nazar's a guy I'd like to see. 91's now available again now that Beauvillier's gone and in Nashville. Yeah,
that's right.
But at the end of the day, I think Michigan's going to keep humming. It's just such a good program right now in Division I hockey. And Nazar being obviously a huge part of that. He's, you know, probably one of their top two or three players on that team, and a huge reason why they've had so much success this season. So he at least did his one favor and knocked Notre Dame out of the Big Ten tournament and, you know, got us Landon Slaggart in a Blackhawks uniform. But unfortunately, I think because they're humming so much, he's not going to get a chance to do the same this season. But he'll compete for a starting job next year. I'm sure that's in the cards with the front office.
Yep. All right. So keep an eye on the NCAA ice hockey tournament with those five Blackhawks prospects all representing their respective schools there. All right. On to the injury report, the mainstay of the Four Feathers podcast here. The most recent one, most notable one, is Colin Blackwell. He got jammed up in that game last week against Los Angeles. Looked like he just like his right shoulder absorbed the full blow, and it was just like an awkward play along the boards there. He's missed the last four games. I believe he was skating earlier in the week, and then wasn't cleared for contact yet, though. Wasn't skating today, though, Friday's morning or practice, and it seems like he'll be doubtful and will miss a fifth straight here, Ron. It's unfortunate because it took him so long to get back from that sports hernia injury. Didn't come back until, what, like mid-late December, and yeah, provided a jolt like right away, and guys rave about him in the locker room, and then now to see him have another one of these. If you remember last year, it was kind of end of February when his season got cut short with that sports hernia to start with. So feels like time is a flat circle here, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's been a rough go for Colin Blackwell in Chicago. And obviously a guy that, you know, was one of Kyle Davidson's first moves really as the interim GM, bringing him in during that offseason before last season. It's just such a tough go for him. A guy that's shown some offensive prowess. I don't think he's going to have any issue getting another job elsewhere after the season since his contract is up. Whether that be here with the Hawks, I don't know if they're going to try to retain him or not, or he's going to move on somewhere else. But just such a rough blow. You feel for guys that, you know, you mentally struggle to come back and fight through the sports hernia injury. And he mentioned a couple of setbacks along the way, and just it took longer to heal than he was hoping. And then now this. And so it'd be great to see him at least a few more games here down the stretch. And hopefully this is just, you know, something small that he's dealing with. But unfortunately, I mean, we're kind of seeing it right now with like a guy like Connor Murphy, where we might not even see him the rest of the season. So right. It begs you to question at least whether or not Blackwell is going to be the same way.
Yep. Well, even if this is going to be the end of the road for Colin Blackwell, even though the time was short, I feel like he'll be fondly remembered by Blackhawks fans, regardless of what the case is. And who knows? Like you said, there's still always the option that they could reunite, even if it's a one-year deal after the season. So but we'll see what happens down the stretch here. So stay tuned at Four Feathers Pod on Twitter, and we'll share out any of the injury updates that Luke may provide in the coming days. Other little small injury note, Nikita Zaitsev was a little banged up in Thursday's game against Ottawa. As we all know, he's a sleeper agent for them since they gave him a big contract and he deflected that goal in. he had an illness, little upper body thing, so he's unlikely to play Saturday. Jared Tenorti will draw back in. That's the extent of the injury report. You know, the long-term ones, Murph and Hall. Assuming Murph's out for the season, Hall obviously done, but good to see him skating there. So that wraps up injury report, Ron. Now time for the fun stuff. Let's ruffle some feathers, and you're going to lead it off.
I'm going to continue to bang this drum. I'm going to continue to remind people to stop disrespecting Seth Jones, and I am going to bang that drum the rest of the season. Hell, I'm going to bang that drum into next season probably as well, every time I see people bitch and moan about this guy. Like you said, Johnny, you can hate the contract all you want, but he's not the one that went to the Blackhawks and said, hey, sign me to this and you have to. And they brought it to him. They negotiated that deal with him and were willing to sign it. So it's a Stan Bowe thing, and you got to just take it for what it is. But he's doing everything you could ask of a number one defenseman, especially right now with a young blue line besides for Connor Murphy and the, you know, this year's walking traffic cone and Nikita Zaitsev. And, you know, he's doing exactly what you need him to do. So stop disrespecting Seth Jones. Johnny, so much so we finally added number four to the collection.
I saw that.
Jerseys. It finally happened.
I saw that.
I wanted a white one. They didn't have any white ones, so we settled for red. But it's good to have that one in the wardrobe finally. And another guy too, really quick, Johnny, that I'm going to ruffle some feathers on. Brian Donato is outplaying his contract. $2 million a year for two years is what he signed this past summer. Obviously, he's got another year at $2 million. He's only 27 years old, Johnny. This is a guy I would love to see the Blackhawks potentially give a Jason Dickinson / Nick Foligno type contract to after this year. Maybe give him that little 2-year extension, keep him around. He's going into his prime. He's shown you he can be a good depth scorer. He plays a little bit of every forward position. And I think he's a guy that would just, is a benefit to have, especially if you're going to have young players like Frank Nazar a part of this group next year, a still young Landon Slaggart. Obviously, Connor Bedard's still young despite his elite talent. So I would like to see Donato stick around a lot longer. But as of now, man, he is outplaying that contract, and he has been a beautiful surprise, I think, for the Chicago Blackhawks this season. So it might be a ruffle some feathers that ruffles feathers because people agree, and they're like, oh, yeah, that feels nice. Ruffle those feathers. But
yeah,
those are my ruffle feathers for this episode, sir.
Yeah, I think you laid it out perfectly on Seth, but mine, going back to my little ticker here, and I love that NHL, on the fly from NHL Network last year when it was, I think it was an overtime winner that he scored against Buffalo. That's when I originally grabbed it from. But I love that. And every time he does something, you're going to see the kiss of Seth on the Four Feathers timeline. So unfollow if you don't like it, but join in. Throw it a like if you do. Yeah. So that's going to persist there. Ron, another thing too, hey, from manning the Four Feathers bot account, we've got some random AI reply bots that come there, and it just gives me a chuckle every time because we are like shtick here, and we talk about a Blackhawks legend, you know, someone that is like here for just like a very short term, like Riley Stillman was a Blackhawks legend, right? Like
100%.
Or it can be like a, you know, an actual legend, like Duncan Keith is a Blackhawks legend, right? It goes both ways there. But when we put out the happy birthday to Blackhawks legend Bobby Orr, and obviously that's kind of like a joke among hockey fans because he's a Bruins lifer, and then the end of the career came over to the Hawks, and you know, injuries cut that short, but he did play parts of two seasons with the Blackhawks, mm-hmm. I want to say. But the AI reply bots are in there, and I'm pretty sure he played with Boston, not Blackhawks. And it's like, well, you know, maybe the AI needs to get better at sorting hockey reference then, because he did play for the Blackhawks, just so you know, AI reply bots. So just wanted to throw that one out there because those are pretty interesting. So maybe I'll try and mock them a little bit when I do see him pop up, because the funny thing is there's always a hashtag like hockey life hashtag, you know, like
something ridiculous, yeah, that just like, that makes no, it very clear
that no human clearly would, and it's just trying to generate based on, you know, what it reads, basically what it scans the timeline for, and it's just weird to me.
The best part of it also is because, you know, their AI bots, when he's clearly wearing a Blackhawk sweater in the photo,
yeah,
the
picture, yeah.
that makes it even better.
Yeah, right. So that was my ruffles of feathers here. All right, let's get on to stick taps. No salt shaker this week, so Ron, start us off on stick taps.
Yeah, stick taps, John. I appreciate the cast of Shorzy showing up at the Blackhawks game on Tuesday night.
How are you now? Someone said they were trying to recruit Dickskin.
Yeah.
Jim Dickskin, Jason Dickinson, how are you now?
They were trying to recruit him indeed, and he had a hell of a night, two goals too with them in attendance. It felt like it was meant to be. But Johnny, I stick taps to the Shorzy crew because A, that's cool. I think a lot of people really got a kick out of that, seeing them in attendance at the United Center. But B, I'm convinced that anytime they're ever going to be in attendance, the home team's never going to lose. So thank you to the Shorzy cast for ensuring the Blackhawks won the day before I turned another year older.
Team will never lose again.
Yeah. Never lose again. At least not when they're there. And I'm here for it. But it was cool seeing them in the building. There was a lot of other people in the building as well. It was actually a pretty, very packed game for a Tuesday night. Obviously, it was Pride night. So it was a great crowd. They were just short. I believe Ben Pope said it was just shy of a sellout by statistical numbers. So hell of an outing at the end of March for a team that's in the basement. And, you know, it's a random Tuesday night in March. I mean,
right,
you gotta love it.
Flames are just middling.
So. Yeah, and the Flames are not even a team that necessarily is going to draw a huge crowd. But actually, it was really, truly an awesome night to be at the UC. And again, a big shout out to the Shorzy cast for ensuring they got a W the day before my birthday. So we got to enjoy some victory beers before celebrating another spin around the old sun.
Alrighty, my stick tap goes out to everybody's favorite accountant, Ron. That is because today is the anniversary of Scott Foster's e-bug appearance for the Blackhawks. It was on this day in 2018. He made 7 saves in 14 minutes to lock down a Blackhawks 6-2 win over the Winnipeg Jets. Just such an odd situation with two goalies getting injured there. But man, Scott Foster will forever be a legend. And I guarantee at every single Hawks game you go to, you can at least find one Scott Foster jersey. So stick tap to him on the anniversary.
Johnny, I got a little story to go along with your stick tap here. I think you might know this. Maybe some of our listeners don't. I don't know how many times I've told it. I was actually at that game. I was in attendance for the Scott Foster e-bug game. It was a very weird game in general, Johnny, because we had a lot of firsts in that game. A lot of people forget. Everybody talks about the e-bug performance. That was Brent Seabrook's 1,000th game as well.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget about that because of what ended up transpiring. Colin Delia made his NHL debut that night because of the injury to Anton Forsberg. which obviously ultimately led to him cramping because he had just played the night before in Rockford, or I think two nights before in Rockford. And so then, you know, in comes Scott Foster. Dylan Sakura picked up his first NHL points in that game. I believe he had two assists in that one. And in addition, Victor Edsel, I don't know if everybody remembers him.
Yeah, I remember him.
Blackhawks legend. He picked up his first career NHL point in that game as well. It was a lot of firsts. A lot of crazy shit occurred in a random end of March game against the Winnipeg Jets at the United Center. But that was a cool game to be a part of. And again, that was a game for, in my case, it was celebrating my birthday just a couple of days later, and got everything you could have asked for out of a crazy game, which ultimately became the Scott Foster game. But yeah. Red 1,000th game. A lot of people forget.
What a spectacle. And just thought, you know, back on just Foster real quick, it's like, I was, you know, they like the highlight video that comes up, and it was kind of just like a montage of him, you know, coming from the tunnel and then onto the ice and warming up. And like, but like, the Winnipeg Jets were still trying to come back in that game. I know it was still in hand, but he had to play, what did I say, 14 minutes there? 14:01 is what he played. And like, Tyler Myers is taking shots. You remember, he was still on the Jets. He's a 7-foot dude. Like, he can whip it pretty good. And the 36-year-old accountant made it work.
Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't just like guys coming down and throwing backhands on him and stuff. I mean, these guys were lining up clappers, and you know, the Hawks D men were making sure they cleared it out in front. I mean, it was actually a truly spectacular performance. He took some big shots, some scrums around the net, make sure he was able to cover it up. I mean, it was a very admirable performance. It wasn't just like he came in for the last 2 minutes of the game and saw one shot. I think he faced like 10 shots in that third period and stopped all 10 of them.
He made all 7 saves. Yeah.
There you go. All 7. And again, it was, you know, it felt like it was in hand, but I believe the Hawks only led by 2 at that point. So he very well could have came in, gave up 2 soft ones, and all of a sudden it's a 6-6 game at that point, or a 5-3
game. Final was 6-2, so it was probably 4-2 when he came in.
Yeah, it was 4-2 then when he came in. I think they got 1 when he was out there on the ice, and then they finished off with the old empty netter, of course. But hell of a performance from Mr. Scott Foster. And hey, at least he's a true accountant. I gave up on that profession.
Yeah. All righty. That'll wrap up Stick Tabs for this edition of Four Feathers Podcast. We're closing in on the end. We hope everybody enjoyed the show so far. Once again, we're marching down the home stretch here on season 5, episode 28. Let's take a look at what's on tap next, Ron. We're going to wrap up this East Coast road trip Saturday at the Flyer, 6 o'clock puck drop on NBC Sports Chicago. And then Tuesday at the Islanders, 6:30 p.m. puck drop, I believe, on NBC Sports Chicago as well. So how do you see the rest of this trip playing out for the Hawks?
Something tells me they find a way to win against one of these two teams, and I can't necessarily peg down which one it's going to be.
It's got to be Philly, even though they might be the better team by standings wise, because you just said that you think Bedard's due for something in Philly. So that's got to be it, right?
I think so. I think they're going to respond after a snoozer of a game against the Senators, especially after 2 big consecutive wins against the Sharks and then obviously against the Flames on Tuesday night. I think they're going to give a good fight to the Islanders. I truly do. I think they're going to go into that game and at least put up a good fight. I don't think they're going to just get blanked 4-0 and call it a and roll over and die. I think that game's probably going to be a 3-2, you know, 4-3 type final. I think they can go into Philly and get a win as well. So I'm going to say 1-1. It might even be 1-0-1 if they really have a strong start, but I think they could go 1-1 in these last 2, Johnny, before they're back at the UC for a pair of day games next weekend against the Stars and Wild.
Yeah, I'm going to go the same, Ron, 1-1, and I'll go with the Flyers being the win there. Like I said, I know they're probably the team above in the standings there, and Torts has them, you know, going in a certain way right now. However, Connor Bedard, primetime, Saturday night, hockey, you know, they live for it in Canada. It's hockey night in Canada, right? Even though this game's being played in the States, Connor Bedard, he's got to break that goalless drought. I'm speaking it into existence. So at least one tuck from Bedard, maybe an assist too, a little bit of secondary scoring, and 4-2 Hawks win.
I'm gonna say it's a 3-point night for Bedard. I don't know if it's 1-2 or 2-1, but I'm gonna say 3 points from Bedard on Saturday.
Alrighty, I like it. That'll about wrap up the show here. Thanks for everybody for tuning in. Once again, make sure you're subscribed over on YouTube at OnTap Sportsnet there. Follow us on the socials at Four Feathers Pod and at OnTap Sportsnet. You can find our written content over at OnTapSportsnet.com. That'll wrap it up for this one, Ron. Enjoy your weekend. Hope all the listeners enjoy yours as well. Until next time, let's go Hawks.
Let's go Hawks, baby.